From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1980 when the Pew Research Center found that women earned 64 cents for every dollar men earned. Doesn't necessarily mean women were paid 64 cents on the dollar for the exact same work. It meant that men were getting paid more in general. They were landing more higher-paying jobs, more executive positions. Today, that pay gap is still at least 20 cents by various measures, sometimes more. And tomorrow marks Equal Pay Day, the day when an American woman makes enough money to finally equal what an American man made in 2014. Well, what about when men and women do the same work? Men still make more. The gap is narrower, but men make more, and there are complex and varied reasons for why women make less than men for the same work. We're going to talk about some proposals to change that this hour. And what about the gender pay gap in Western New York? The Susan B. Anthony Center at the University of Rochester has partnered with the Coalition on Pay Equity, or COPE, to create a survey that explores this inequality in our area. We're going to talk about that as well. My guest for the hour on the line with us is Donna Seymour. She's a public policy vice president for the American Association of University Women of New York State, among other things. Donna, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Back in studio with us is Catherine Cerulli. Susan B. Anthony, she's with the Susan B. Anthony Center for Women's Leadership at the University of Rochester. Dr. Cerulli, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Marilyn Tedeschi is here, vice president of the Women's Institute for Leadership and Learning in Seneca Falls, among many other things. Urban educator, youth advocate, business entrepreneur, social activist. I could have chosen any of those titles. I'll give them all for now.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. And Dr. Cerulli, I'm going to start with you. When we look at what Equal Pay Day means to you in general, in 2015, tomorrow marking Equal Pay Day, what does it mean to you?
Sadly, Evan, it means the number of days into the year of 2015 that women need to work to be paid what men were paid in 2014. And the gap continues, despite as long ago as we've known the research started on this issue.
And when it comes to trying to make things more fair, more equitable, Dr. Cerulli, you've said many times that, at least in recent years, we don't see a whole lot changing when it comes to a pay gap, do you?
No, we don't. And I think the reason I joined COPE, which you recently mentioned, mm-hmm. is because I think it's a really exciting opportunity to change things locally.
To get a look at what's actually happening here. So in a moment, we're going to talk about how that research is going to kind of play out, and we'll talk about various issues here. Marilyn, let me ask you, what does Equal Pay Day mean to you?
Equal Pay Day is the time that we look at, again, every year, why there is, what is happening in our world today that makes women have to work longer and harder for the same pay that men get. And it is also different between white women and black women and Hispanic women. And so, you know, it's a time for us to look at. And I think this coalition that we've put together this year is going to make a difference. Last year, I recall we had at AAUW Martha Burke, who came and spoke, an authority on women and pay equity. And, you know, so then, so after that event is over, so then what do we do? And so this is effort this year is putting together a coalition of people from the New York State Court Administration, from the Susan B. Anthony Museum, from AAUW and higher education to look at let's get down to what's really happening here in Rochester. So
And Marilyn mentioned some of the other disparities. It's not just men and women. And Pew has been tracking exactly what Marilyn just talked about. So, for example, we know that in 1980, women made about 64 cents on the dollar to men. Again, not necessarily for the same work. We're talking about men making more money for a lot of different reasons. But 64 cents on the dollar in 1980, and only 43% of the workforce were women. Now it's 47% of the workforce. But the gap has gotten larger among non-white women and men. We're talking about for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men, 64 cents on the dollar is what women make now. Cents out of every dollar that African American women are paid compared to all men, 66 cents on the dollar. So if it's 77 cents on the dollar, women making what men make, it's considerably less for African Americans, for really every other non-white ethnicity and background. And Marilyn, I know that is to you remains a very troubling statistic.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, so we'll talk again more about some of the causes as we go throughout the hour here. Donna, why don't you weigh in as well here when we talk about these gaps that are in play here. It's 2015, and we are going to address the fact that some people think the gender pay gap is overplayed in 2015. Do you think it's overplayed?
Oh, absolutely not. I'll tell you that the sting of the gender pay gap is real. Women feel it at the grocery store. They feel it at the gas station. They feel it everywhere in their lives, and it follows them from the moment they throw their graduation cap in the air at college all the way through to retirement. It's a very, very serious problem that just compounds over time for women. And in fact, one of the things that's the most troubling for me is that every so often we come up with a statistic about how long it will take the gender pay gap to close. Well, the number right now is about 45 years. 45 years means that my granddaughters will maybe be seeing the gap close unless we do something about it right now. And that's just not acceptable in the 21st century when women are an important part of a family's earning. And it makes such a difference to the family, whether it's a single woman, a woman who's married with children, or a woman supporting children on her own. These are critical, critical issues, and they cost society real services in terms of perhaps they need help finding housing. They need help with food. They need help with fuel in the wintertime here in New York State. Those are costs that society's bearing because women aren't earning the check that they're actually working for at their job. So these are very troubling and very serious issues, and they have long-term consequences for the economic health of our counties as well.
Now, Donna, for those who do say that equal pay day is overplayed, I want to read a couple of comments and get your take on that. In the Wall Street Journal, Carrie Lucas wrote an opinion piece entitled, "There is no male-female wage gap." She writes, quote, "If you can accept that the job choices of men and women lead to different unemployment rates, then you shouldn't be surprised by other differences, like differences in average pay." Author Marty Nemko has been attacking what he calls feminist myths for the past decade. Here's what he says about equal pay day. He says, quote, "It's misleading. The data is clear that for the same work, men and women are paid nearly the same. The media needs to look beyond the claims of feminist organizations." And then Nemko goes on to say, here's why men make more than women. Quote, "Men choose higher paying jobs, period." What do you think, Donna?
Well, if that were true, then, for example, the statistics that just came out that say that in the field of nursing, which, as we all know, is largely dominated by women, in almost every case, a man who goes into nursing is actually going to make more than his female counterpart. They require the same amount for education, and yet we find that in terms of practical application in the paycheck department, men are making more. And there are also opportunities for them to rise faster than their female counterparts. You know, people often say that the argument about the 77 cents because it's the average of what women make compared to what the white man makes is misleading. But, you know, I like to look at this through the lens of the family. When you look at women in a family, they do experience different pay gaps. For example, I have two daughters and two daughter-in-laws. They live in three different states. They're making different amounts of money based on what state they live in. I have a sister and three sister-in-laws. They live in another three states. They're all experiencing the wage gap differently depending on where they live. And, you know, if you want to take and look at my nieces who also live in other states, you can see that in the context of a family, the 77 cents per dollar is the average. But for most people, they have family members who live in different states, and so they're experiencing these wage gaps at different rates.
Let me ask, before I get to some of the rebuttal to Marty Nemko's piece from Claudia Golden, who's a Harvard University labor economist who actually did her own study on this, and she has some interesting stats that I am going to read in just a moment. I want to hear what Catherine Cerulli and Marilyn Tedeschi say when you hear someone like Marty Nemko say, hey, men just choose higher paying jobs. We do not need to make it more complicated. Do you accept that, Kate?
No. And the data is pretty clear about that. And when we think about what Donna was just saying, when you look even at the lower income jobs where we have single-headed female households, those women are earning less on the dollar, even more so, as you said, from coming from minority and underrepresented populations. We have a problem. And I think what has to happen at the next level and why the center got involved from the University of Rochester is this has public health implications. Because the trickle-down effect of what the family income is directly correlates to family health, the ability for families to eat healthy foods, for families to engage in leisure activities. And when you look at the crisis in Rochester that we have, the war on poverty, the children living in poverty, and our single-headed households, it's all connected. And that's the language, in my opinion, we need to start talking about.
Marilyn? Marty's comment, men make more because they choose higher paying jobs. Your take on that?
I know that's not true. And I can only look at the jobs that I have had in the past. I worked for the Rochester City School District for 25 years. And as when you're in the union and you're a teacher, it is pretty well set on what you're going to get. It goes by the degrees that you have and the experience that you've had. But once you get into administration and out of the union, and that is when people begin to negotiate what they want and what they feel they're worth. And I have realized over the years that women are definitely at a disadvantage with this. And this is one of the things that AAUW is working on as we look to our young people and say, you need to know these skills so that you, when you go out and get a job and begin to negotiate your salary, this is what you need to know.
Well, let me go ahead and read some of the numbers compiled by Claudia Golden, a Harvard University labor economist. And the New York Times lists her as a leading scholar on women and the economy. She writes that a majority of the pay gap between men and women actually comes from differences within occupations, not necessarily between them, and widens in the highest paying ones like business, law, and medicine, exactly as Donna was just saying. And then she compiled a list of 18 different fields in which... I'm sorry, my math is terrible. I think it's 28 different fields. And she looks at how women fare compared to men within the fields. Again, now we're not talking about total pay. We're talking about within individual fields. Where do women do the worst in the United States compared to men for doing the exact same work? Financial specialists, 66 cents on the dollar for the exact same work. Podiatrists, 67 cents on the dollar for the same work. Now, let me go down the list then. And Don, I'll come back to you after I read this list to get some of your takes, because you kind of touched on this in your opening comments here. But here's the list compared by economist Claudia Golden. For the same work, what do women make on the dollar to men? Brokerage clerks, 71 cents. Physicians and surgeons, 71 cents. Aircraft pilots, 71 cents. Financial advisors, 73. Dentists, 74 cents. Accountants, 76 cents. Veterinarians, 81 cents. Lawyers and judges and economists, 82 cents on the dollar. Physician assistants, 83 cents. Post-secondary teachers and computer hardware engineers, 84 cents. Criminal detectives and PR specialists, 85 cents on the dollar. Psychologists, 86 cents. Construction managers and computer software engineers, 88 cents on the dollar to men. Nurses, 89 cents on the dollar. Pharmacists, 91 cents on the dollar. Chemists, 96. And where is their parity? 100 cents on the dollar, women to men, in dental hygienists, HR specialists, and advertising salespeople. Again, that's research compiled by Harvard University labor economist Claudia Golden. Donna, what do you make of it?
Well, I want to pluck out just one of those statistics, and that was a very impressive list, I have to say, because it really points out to the fact that this isn't about women's choices in terms of the kind of work they do. But I think you mentioned it was 81 cents on the dollar for a veterinarian.
That's right.
Well, my niece is actually in Colorado, and she's a third-year veterinary student. And one of the things that she's been talking about and noticing is that as at one time, women were very rare in the veterinary field. Well, now they're at par in terms of being in school. About 50% of her class is women. Now that women are beginning to really take over in some of these fields and be at par with men, what they're noticing is that the pay scale is dropping for everybody. It seems that as soon as you reach parity, all of a sudden it's no longer a lucrative field. And, of course, as you know, and as anyone knows, when you're in any kind of medical profession, you're talking about 8 years of schooling. So you've made a huge investment in your education in order to do this work. And all of a sudden now it's not going to pay you back at the same rate that it was when it was a mostly male occupation. And I think we see that over and over again, kind of the pink ghetto jobs were often thought to be teaching, those kinds of things. Well, now when women reach parity in some of these high-paying professions, all of a sudden the pay isn't as good. And that's really a problem because, again, we make the same investment in our education. And as we know, the cost of education has gone through the roof in this country in the last few years in particular. So, you know, when you look at these numbers in terms of actual requirements for the job, it's clear there is a pay gap. And it's also clear that in some cases the pay gap gets worse the more a woman enters the field of occupation.
All right, and so let's talk about what research is starting to tell us, or what we'd like to see come out of the research. And if you're just joining us here, we're talking about the fact that the Susan B. Anthony Center at the University of Rochester is partnering with COPE, the Coalition on Pay Equity, to create a survey that explores the kind of inequality we might see in the Rochester area. And Catherine Cerulli, what's the process like with that?
Well, this has been a really exciting process. The creation of the survey has been a very collaborative endeavor. And as Marilyn said, I think COPE is an incredibly unique partnership. I don't think I've been at the table where we've had representation from the Greater Rochester Women's Attorneys, the New York State Office of Court Administration, Higher Ed, AAUW, and the museum. And the women who were involved came together, again, the invitation from Judge Frazee, and we started talking about what could we do. And we were interested in having an action plan, not creating information around what we already know, but how could we move the mark? How could we make our community better? And one of the things we all agreed was the need to do an environmental scan. What does Rochester look like? What are people's experiences here? And one of the things that the committee was committed to was really examining the intersectionality of issues. When we think about pay, people often think about the dollar for dollar that you're stating to, 70 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on the dollar. We were interested in broadening that scope slightly because it's not simply about the dollar earned, it's what that dollar stands for. So when you think about one's compensation package, we also want to be considering who has opportunities for leadership in their workplace, opportunities for networking, higher education opportunities. Does your employer pay for healthcare benefits and those sorts of things? So the survey is broader in scope than the dollar for dollar discussion, and it's also considering women-owned businesses, women that are self-employed, women who maybe are engaged in consultant organizations where they may not be included in the surveys that have been done traditionally in workplaces. So the survey is pretty comprehensive. We're hoping to have 1,000 people participate, and we're going to keep it open until we do. I am really impressed with the students at the University of Rochester. Two students in particular, Alicia Alani and Rebecca Bergman, have taken this on as their issue, and we are circulating the survey information to neighborhoods and libraries where women may traditionally, and men, not have access to email. So flyers are going to be posted at neighborhood community settlement houses, libraries, where individuals who don't have access to computers may come to use stationary computers and for them to know about the survey, because we really want to have a breadth of diversity in who's taking the survey.
Okay, and what's the timeline for completion here?
It's been open about little more than two weeks, and we have over 200 at this time. So we're thinking it'll be open probably, hopefully, about another 4 or 5 weeks.
And again, once you have that data in-house, is it a matter of understanding what our community looks like, and then I guess with better data we can formulate better action?
Well, the goal for COPE, Laura Myers has taken the lead on creating toolkits. These toolkits are posted on the AAUW's website now. We don't expect people to wait for the survey results. We'd love people to take action now if they're motivated tomorrow with tomorrow's activities, which we can talk about in a moment. But the goal with the toolkits, it lists opportunities for both individuals and organizations to take action right now in changing their environments or their individual circumstances. The toolkit are things that are available nationally. They're on the internet. We combed the internet. We talked to individuals who are committed to this issue. The AAUW has their own, which Marilyn or Donna can speak more to. But the goal, again, is to be action-oriented, not tissue-wringing and hand-holding. It's really to have people get out there and do something about it.
All right, let's pause that thought for just a moment because I want to get our first phone call in, and I see the phone starting to ring. I haven't even mentioned the number, so people are obviously interested in this subject. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to weigh in. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Donna Seymour, Catherine Cerulli, Marilyn Tedeschi, all on the program today as we talk about the gender pay gap. And before I get to the first phone call, let me read the first emails from James. James says, I own a business. Is it my fault if a female job candidate doesn't negotiate as hard as a male? Bernard in Fairport wants to jump in on maybe that exact point. Bernard, first, I know the general idea of what you want to talk about, but I think it dovetails with James's email. Bernard, what do you think when you hear a business owner say, hey, if women don't negotiate as hard, is it my fault?
Well, I think your panel is being very rational, and they understand and have scientific data. But I would suggest that they need to stop being that way, and they need to basically put marketing pressure on it. So it would seem to me that if you publish that Walmart paid women less than they paid men, then women, which represent a very, very large part of the market, would go down the street instead of going to Walmart. So what I'd like to hear in terms of who's paying women less is some names. And when I listen to your callers talk about rationale, like men, you know, go for better jobs and so on and so forth, have they ever worked in the industry? That's not true. It's biased. It's because they can do it, not because they should do it. It's unfair. It needs to be treated that way. And like I say, publish some numbers, and the market will also provide a lot of pressure. Thanks very much for the show.
Bernard, thank you very much. He's saying, shame these companies. What do you think, Kate?
Well, before we get to Bernard's question, which first of all, thank you so much for calling in. And certainly there's been Supreme Court cases that have gone all the way to the highest court, which have looked at these circumstances by industry. I want to speak to a minute about James' comment about women coming into the workplace and negotiating differently.
Yes.
There is a on the toolkit on the AUW's website is an application called the Close the Gap app, which is an application that is self-study. It was created by Take the Lead and She Negotiates. It was a partnership between those two organizations, and the authors were Gloria Felt, Lisa Gateson, and Victoria Pyshen. And the beauty of the Close the Gap app are individuals can do it at their own pace, in the privacy of their own home. I think it costs $10. But we have recently launched a series of small work groups at the University of Rochester, which includes a student group. We've had a mixed staff faculty group, and we had a very intensive program for associate professors. And the beauty of the Close the Gap app is it represents diverse fields. It's got diverse role models. It helps one create their mentoring network, what their CV looks like, how they go into negotiation, and how they interview. And there's a professor at the University of Rochester, Professor Estrada, that's been hosting conversations with actual college students who are getting ready to do exactly what James said, negotiate their first job. And that's one of the things that Maryland's agency and organization's been very committed to is the college population and having people have those dialogues. And I'm really happy, this is anecdotal, but we had one of our graduates just of our small work group mm-hmm. just completed the Close the Gap app. She negotiated her first job, and she got a higher salary than she was
before. Before I kick it over to Marilyn, then, Where do you get the app?
Close the Gap app. It's available online, right. And I believe it costs $10. People can just Google that word,
yeah.
Close the Gap app.
Just look up the Close the Gap app. Marilyn, what do you think?
I understand, and I thank Bernard for mm-hmm. calling in and saying that. And I think that we are on a place where we are trying to shame those organizations and corporations who are not doing the right thing. This is a way that we need to expose all of the things that are happening. But I like to think more that we would get to the heads of these corporations ethically, look at what is happening here, and to do the right thing for the people. And if it takes embarrassing, then that's what we must do.
Okay, and Donna, I'm coming to you in just a second, but let me follow up with that, Marilyn, because the New York Magazine had a fascinating piece called Women Can't End the Wage Gap on Their Own. And they are blaming, in some regards, employers who take advantage of this whole notion that what James is talking about. James is emailing saying, I own a business. Is it my fault if I've got two job candidates, one negotiates harder than the other, do I have to pay the other one more? And if it's typically the man who negotiates more, do I have to pay the woman more if she doesn't negotiate? Here's what New York Magazine writes about that. Quote, 58% of women who were surveyed say they don't have the information to negotiate successfully. 56% report not knowing what to ask for. 55% don't negotiate because they don't want to come across as pushy. And New York Magazine says those fears are justified. Research shows that women pay a social price when they ask for higher wages. One researcher has repeatedly found evidence, quote, that the advice that women stand up for themselves and assert their position strongly in negotiations may not have the intended effect. It may even backfire. And even the experts in the human resources departments acknowledge that it's hard to find information on what you should be paid. So women not only feel occasionally, based on surveys, that they either don't have the information or they don't want to look pushy, but when they do push for more, sometimes there is a sexist backlash. So, Marilyn, do you agree with that as a premise? And then what can we do about it?
I do agree with it as a premise. Mm-hmm. And again, we need to get the people, the employers who are the ones who are hiring, to look at the whole person and their needs and see that this, you know, you've got to do the right thing ethically. It's just more of doing the same stuff is going to continue, and we've got to stop.
All right, Donna Seymour, respond then to James's question, which dovetails exactly with this issue, which is, should an employer recognize if there are candidates competing for more or negotiating harder, is there a moral obligation to make sure women are not being unfairly penalized based on that?
Well, you know, I hesitate to get into the morality business, particularly with business, but there are a couple of points I would like to make along those lines. Kate talked a little bit about the Close the Gap app, which is a great tool to use. AAUW has another service that we offer, and we've used it around New York State and around the country lots of times. It's called Start Smart, and these are salary negotiation workshops that we do in partnership originally with the Wage Project, out of. And now AUW's actually bought it and is running it themselves. And the interesting thing about these is, and I've sat in on these workshops before, so I know how they work, they take young women and young men, because both are eligible to take part in these at college, and we sit and we go through, what are your expected expenses? You know, what's it going to cost you for food? What's it going to cost you for an apartment? All these expected expenses. What is the salary range in your field? And we do have information that does help people determine what the expected range of salary is for a starting position. And it helps students to understand what their actual expenses are going to be once they're out on their own, out of college. And it's rather it's always amusing to sit in on these because students really have no clue what some things are going to cost. I can remember sitting in one, and the students agreed that they would have to have $100 to spend on their food budget for a month. And, of course, those of us who buy groceries regularly smiled at that one. But, you know, when you're in a college situation and you're not buying groceries, you're, you know, going into the cafeteria to eat, you really don't have that sense. So these are really important workshops because it gives them an opportunity to really fine-tune what their expenses are going to be. And when you understand what the salary range is in a field, then you know what to ask for. And, you know, to go back to that report that you quoted about people really don't know how to do that, that's a real gap, that people don't know how to do that. They don't know what the expenses are, and it's hard for them to estimate that unless they've really done this work. So Start Smart workshops, Close the Gap app, things like that are very, very important tools for people trying to get started. And here's the other side of that. What you start out at your first job is where you start out for the rest of your life. And if you start out below the average wage for that field, you're going to be playing catch up for your whole life, and it's going to impact you up and down the line, particularly at retirement. You know, I was just looking at a study today that said that half of retirees in this country are not going to have enough money. And that starts on their first day on the job because they haven't gotten an equal wage. So, yeah, these things are really important. And if employers are smart, they're thinking about the fact that if they pay their wages to their employees, those employees are going to have the money to spend in the community that their business is. And that's going to actually make for a healthier community. That's one of the things I love about the COPE project in Rochester, is because it's really taking an in-depth look at the community and finding community-based solutions. That's what we need to do everywhere.
We're talking to Donna Seymour, a public policy vice president for the American Association of University Women of New York State, Marilyn Tedeschi, the president of the Greater Rochester Area Branch of the American Association of University Women, Catherine Cerulli from the Susan B. Anthony Center for Women's Leadership at the University of Rochester, that is partnering with COPE, the Coalition on Pay Equity, as they work on that survey that is exploring gender pay inequality in the Rochester area. We're exploring Equal Pay Day, which is tomorrow on the program today, what it is, what it isn't, and how to fix some of the gap. Don in Brighton, Paul, we're coming to you on the phone next, and we are going to explore a rather radical solution, or at least a proposal to this. Have you heard what the CEO of Reddit is doing? She made an announcement recently that a lot of people were taking a look at. So let's take a short break and come right back and talk about the pay gap next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about two high-end singing competitions coming to Rochester this weekend, La Delenia and Classical Idol, both of them focusing with a component of opera. One is entirely opera, the other has a cross-section of genres. We're going to talk to some of the judges and talk about how Rochester became a hub of these competitions. It's all next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Genesee Country Village, holding its 17th annual antique show featuring items from antique dealers and collectors, and an opportunity to visit the John L. Whale Gallery Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. gcv.org.
Welcome back to Connections, and let's get to the phones and those who've been waiting. Don in Brighton, go ahead.
Hi. A couple of comments. I still think about some of it is a social gap, because I know when I did my student teaching, my five best students were girls, and not one of them wanted to go into any of the science or the high-paying fields. They had a social idea that they didn't belong in that, and that wasn't what they wanted to do. So they were picking fields to go into that were going to obviously pay less. And the other comment I want to make is I have a niece who's a lawyer, and she was doing very well. Then she started having children, and this kept having interruptions in her career. And of course, after 10 years of taking little breaks to have children and taking breaks to raise them, finding people to take care of them, she fell behind the other lawyers. So we have to look at some of these other factors that are not just the fault of companies, but a lot of it are choices. I have a daughter who was excellent in the sciences. So what did she do? She studied theater. What happened when she got out? She got jobs in the sciences, but they didn't have to pay her because she didn't have the degree. And they knew darn well that no other company was going to hire her at the pay that they were giving her.
All right, hold on, Don. Stay there because I want to circle back to your first point, which is about the fact that women bear children, and women who start families sometimes, as you say, take a break and get passed by men in the organizations. I think there is an understanding that there are obviously gender and biological differences, and that's not something that anyone would seek to deny. I think the question is, if women are treated unfairly based on, number one, their potential for having children. Sometimes women don't get promotions just based on the fact that they're viewed as potentially starting families. And then whether they are given a sort of a fair approach to maintain and continue to advance despite starting families. It's a complex question. Donna Seymour, what do you think?
Well, that's true that, you know, there is a gender component to reproduction. There's no question about it. But what's interesting is that AUW research that came out a little while ago, a couple of years ago, called Graduating to a Pay Gap. Young women who graduate from college start out behind their male counterparts, and they are often not married and they don't have children. So that component about having kids doesn't even hold up with amongst young women who don't have children. They're still starting out behind their male counterparts.
They may start out behind, but the point is they keep falling farther behind. It's like when I would take time off from my job, and like I took a year off doing something different, and I came back to it, I was behind. And every time you drop, you stop, you fall back. You don't keep up to date. You take a year off for some reason, and you fall way behind. You fall more than a year behind. You fall a couple of years behind. And those are the things that...
Don, I don't know a whole lot of moms who get a year off. I don't know if you know the maternity laws in this country, but it's us, Papua New Guinea, and something like Antarctica that don't allow actual leave time for...
Well, I used a year as an example. You take 2 months off, and you've lost more than 2 months. And I would notice it on my job, even if I took a month off for a vacation. That was very noticeable. And the time is, I remember with my wife, it was more than just the effect of the time off. There was the time, the hormonal effects right afterwards. These things cause a handicap. A woman that she can't help.
Okay, thanks for the call, Don. A hormonal handicap. Donna?
I'm not going to touch that one, but what I will say is this, that what we know about that the wage pay gap is part of a larger series of economic issues that unfairly target women. Certainly there's the mommy gap in terms of wages. There is also... the problem you point out very, very well, you point out the problem of the fact that we do not have modern family leave laws in this country, and that in lots of places are much, in fact, I could remember having a discussion with a Canadian woman a few years ago. She was a educated woman. She had just gotten a research grant when she found out she was pregnant. So she called up her Canadian institution and said that this had happened and how would it affect your grant? And they said to her, well, it quite certainly will not affect your grant at all. We'll put it on hold for a whole year, and if you decide at the end of that time that you need a little bit more time with your family, then we'll grant you more time, and then you just restart the grant when you're ready to restart the grant. Well, that is absolutely unheard of in this country. We don't take that attitude towards women in business or in academia about having families. And that's what a modern 21st century nation does in terms of understanding the need to balance work and life responsibility. So that's another issue, but it's related to many things that also go on in women's lives. For example, we don't have enough high-quality, affordable daycare either. That affects families. It affects women a little bit more than it affects men, but there's certainly a lot of men who have the same struggle about what do you do for daycare with your family, because people do have a tremendous need to juggle work and life.
And let me just correct the record. I had Papua New Guinea correct. I was thinking Antarctica, of the other country that didn't have paid maternity leave. Of course, there's nobody really living there. I'm sure if there were, they would have paid maternity leave. It turns out it's Suriname and Liberia in the United States and Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. Isn't that
there
nice
you go.
Company to be in.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, Catherine, you wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, if I could just speak to something Donna said. The National Institute of Health has created a mechanism by which people can have extensions in their grant mechanisms for not only childcare responsibilities, but also family responsibilities, which I think is important. And that's something we haven't touched upon yet, that for many women who take leave from their jobs, it's not just about childcare. It's also now about parent care. It's taking care of their ailing parents and sometimes other sick relatives. We know that women bear the burden primarily for family responsibilities. One of the things that when we think about research and what research tells us, there's always limitations to every study. And I think you're going to have people on both sides of a fence looking at a study and dissecting it in the way that they want to. The Laboratory of Interpersonal Violence, which is the partnering side of the fence with the survey with COPE, Kay Resch is working on it. One of the things that we hope to do is really get a broad picture and be able to look at our own community, because when we have national surveys, it's hard to drill down to what your local community can do and what your local community numbers look like. So I think one of the beauties of COPE is that we're focusing on our local community, and we are asking those questions about childcare leave, breastfeeding options during the workday. We're asking those important questions that are related to being a woman in a workplace. But I want to highlight for a moment that the big push about women in the workplace and these issues being new, relatively new in the last 30 years perhaps, women have worked for centuries in the United States, and there's been pay gaps for a long time. Look at families dating back in my own family. I'm a fourth generation working mom. We know that women have been working for years. It's just that our attention to this matter has been relatively new over the past probably 40 years since 63.
Briefly, what did you think of Don's comment that said, hey, you're a mom, Kate, you take a break, in his words, to have a child, you're going to get past, that's the natural order?
Well, I don't think he was necessarily suggesting it's the natural order. I heard him saying we need to address it and we need to do something about it, and there's ways to do that. So when you have a woman reentering the workforce after raising their children, I just worked with a really close girlfriend of mine. She'd been out 10 years. Remember, as a charge nurse 10 years ago, that predated email, texting, and a whole host of technology changes that someone reentering the workforce needs to get back up to date on. So I think if we have moms who take the choice to be home with their kids, what do we offer those folks returning to the workforce the same way we would anybody else who's got a long gap?
All right, I've got to try to move quickly to cover a lot of ground in the last 7 minutes here. Paul, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, for many years I worked as an engineer with women who were computer scientists, engineers, scientists, and I could only have hoped to have had the abilities that some of them they had. But I have a question and a comment. First, you mentioned earlier there was a profession, for instance, veterinarians, where women apparently are now the majority, but the salaries apparently have been reduced over a period of time as that happened. My question would be, why would that be the case? Why would that profession have decreased in salary when the profession is, you know, they deal primarily with the public almost directly? People take their animals directly to the vet and select them based on their ability. So that's my question. My comment would be that, I'll let you answer that question.
Well, Paul, thank you for the call. I don't know. Not every line of work is the same. There's not an easy, understandable answer for all of this. And I, Paul, I wish we could give you a more satisfying answer. In the research I did for this program, those questions come up and there's not always a good answer. But there are solutions being floated, and here is what Ellen Pao, who is the interim CEO of Reddit, she said she would be essentially stopping negotiations for Reddit positions. She said, quote, "Men negotiate harder than women do, and sometimes women get penalized when they do negotiate." That's what she told the Wall Street Journal. She added, quote, "So as part of our recruiting process, we don't negotiate anymore. We come up with an offer that we think is fair for men and women, period." Marilyn, what do you think about that?
I like it. Okay, personally, I think we need to look at the job, the city it's in, the people who are applying, to make sure that everybody gets an equal shot at it. And I think that there's some merit to that.
Okay, Kate, what do you think?
I'd be curious to know what sort of follow-up they're going to be doing in terms of research and looking at how this is applied and who it affects the most.
Mm-hmm. Donna, what do you think?
It's an interesting concept, and again, I think both Kate and Marilyn are exactly right. There's a lot of room for abuse. There's also room for improvement, and it's going to take a lot of detailed study. It's certainly, if they're making the exact same offer to men and women, and it's a great place to start.
Yeah, I think she went on to say that if you're the CEO and you look at your company and there are men and women doing the same job and men are making more than women, that's a moral failing. That's her position, and that's how Reddit is trying to root that out by simply saying, no more negotiating. Men and women will get the same offers. We will not go back and forth. So that will be interesting to follow. The other idea you hear a lot about is obviously following Lilly Ledbetter and the question of whether women are getting accurate information when it comes to what they should be making or what other people make. And some people have been pushing for more open books. Bernard mentioned it. Open it up. Help us see inside a little bit more. Give women the information. Donna, what do you think about that?
Wage transparency is absolutely a crucial piece of this whole, people have got to be free to compare notes and find out what's going on within a company. So, you know, Lilly Ledbetter really broke some important ground with her case, and she continues to advocate every day all over this country for wage transparency, and it's absolutely a critical piece of this whole picture.
Kate Cerulli, I know there are some events coming up tomorrow for Equal Pay Day, Marilyn as well. We can talk in the last couple minutes about that. And Kate, you've kept public health on our minds as we discuss this issue throughout the conversation. Sometimes we get fixated on the numbers, but you keep reminding us that public health is impacted by this discussion.
Yes, I strongly believe that public health is impacted. We did a study a few years ago at the Laboratory of Interpersonal Violence with 122 women here in Rochester who were victims of intimate partner violence. And we were interested in looking at work. There's a group called SAFER that really encouraged us to look at the work environments of the women who participated in our study. And one of the things we found is that the women who were employed were healthier. They obviously had less poverty. They had less physical, emotional, and psychological abuse. They had less PTSD post-abuse and better physical health. And when we look at the women who were in those jobs, imagine if they were having equitable raises or jobs pay for the work that they were doing. I think we can improve the health of our community if we focus on this gap issue. Our event tomorrow night was planned by our students. We're really excited. Elizabeth Nicholas from the Empire Justice Center, Kaylin Rich from the New York Civil Liberties Union, and Susan Rogers from your own WXXI are going to be joining us tomorrow night on the U of R campus. And if individuals Google Rochester Pay Equity Day, they'll get a host of other events that are happening tomorrow.
Okay. And we get a comment from Corey on Twitter. Says, Full Moon Vista is hosting the Twilight Criterium. It's a USA Cycling rule for 2015 that now requires equal prize money for men and women. So we are listening, and they are even trying to do lower the gap in prize money. So thank you for writing in, Corey, who's been listening to the conversation today. Marilyn, some closing thoughts. We've got about 30 seconds. Some closing thoughts from you as we go into Equal Pay Day tomorrow. What do you want to leave the audience with?
I want to leave them with our COPE, our coalition, and how we are trying to bring people together. And one thing that we are doing is trying to get a joint proclamation from the county, from Maggie Brooks, along with Lovely Warren, working together on equal pay. This is just another way that we are working together with all of the people involved.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us today, and we hope we'll continue this conversation on many more days, especially as we see more of the research and understanding what's happening in our own community. Marilyn, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kate Cerulli, thanks so much. Always a nice conversation with you.
Thank you, Adam.
And on the line with us, Donna Seymour. Thank you, Donna. Thanks for taking the time for us this hour.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be a part of this process. We had a great discussion.
All right. Very good. We'll take a short break and shift gears entirely here on this Monday afternoon. Hope you're enjoying this Monday afternoon. This is Connections on member-supported public radio.